From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak. Today, our program focuses on autism and diverse ways of thinking. First, we speak with New York Times bestselling author Dr. Temple Grandin, an autistic woman who has become one of the top scientists in the humane livestock handling industry, and who sheds light on the various ways not only an autistic mind operates, but minds in general. Her new book is called Visual Thinking. Temple Grandin is an outspoken advocate for the autism community and is also the subject of a movie starring Claire Danes about her life. It's simply called Temple Grandin. And then moving the conversation locally, Deb Hartley and Liza Howell from Bridge 21 will join me in the second half of the hour. That's a local organization offering support and housing options for neurodiverse individuals in our community. All this coming up this hour. You're listening to The Mountain Life here on KPCW Park City. Stay with us. We'll be back. Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm David Windsor.
Our next guest is New York Times bestselling author Temple Grandin. She has been a pioneer in improving the welfare of farm animals, as well as an outspoken advocate for the autism community. Her new book is called Visual Thinking, The Hidden Gifts of People Who Think in Pictures, Patterns, and Abstractions. Temple Grandin, welcome to The Mountain Life.
It's absolutely great to be here.
Well, we are absolutely thrilled to be speaking with you. I just have to ask about your experience growing up with autism. I have to honor your mother because it seems like she was just a relentless advocate for really figuring out how you learn best, and you were as well.
Well, I was very lucky to get into a really good early educational program, speech therapy, learn language, finally learned to speak at age 4, lots of emphasis on turn-taking games, where I learned how to wait and take turns at games, really important, and then basic skills like getting dressed and, you know, brushing your teeth, just your basic skills. And by 4, I was talking. Another thing that mother did is she always emphasized my interest in art. And I would just draw the same horse head over and over again. And she'd say, well, let's draw the horse's stable. Let's draw the entire horse. Let's use different media other than pencil. In other words, taking that interest and broadening it. Also, sometimes being in the 50s was an advantage. Manners were taught in a much more structured way. And we had sit-down meals. And let's say we'll just do a little demonstration. Let's say I stirred my drink with my finger. Instead of screaming no, mother would say, use the spoon. She'd give the instruction.
On the one hand, the fact that we are able now to diagnose autism much earlier, so that may be an upside, and then help those with autism or those on the spectrum at an earlier age. On the other hand, from what I've heard you say, it becomes this label, and you know, we're sort of pigeonholing a lot of times those with autism, and we don't provide them the learning opportunities and the ability to find the way that they learn. Is that kind of what you believe?
I think there's some real problems. I'm seeing things where kids are not learning basic skills like shopping. Now, in my book, Visual Thinking, I talk about different kinds of thinking. And when I was young, when I first started working with cattle, I thought everybody thought in pictures the way I did. And then in my late 30s, I learned that was not true. But the other thing I found when I was working on the Visual Thinking book, I went through a whole lot of projects I'd worked on all around the U.S. with major meat companies. And I'm going to estimate that about 20% of the very skilled welders and metal fabricators who invented complicated machinery, drafting people laying out entire factories, that about 20% of these people were either autistic, dyslexic, or ADHD. And how did they get into these jobs? Well, they took a shop class in school, and sometimes a single welding class started their business. And some of these people have huge metal fabrication shops, and they're selling their equipment all over the country.
You talk
and
about,
now,
go ahead.
Now the kid is, they're getting addicted to video games, and they're not becoming video game designers. That's not happening. And we have a huge shortage of skilled people to make equipment now. It's a serious problem, and that's discussed in detail in Visual Thinking book.
I agree with you. I work in construction, and so I've heard you say that, you know, we need these welders, we need plumbers, we need electricians, because robots aren't going to come replace the water heater when it goes out. And so what do you think our educational system is doing to broach this problem, and how do you think it's going to look in the next 20 years?
I'm really concerned. We need to be putting all the hands-on classes back into the schools. You know, when I was in elementary school, I took art, I took wood shop, and I had sewing. And when I was in fourth grade, I had a wonderful little singer cell handy to actually sewed, and I made costumes for the school play with it. But taking out the hands-on classes, worst thing they did, all the shop classes. I was just up at Harvard University, and they have a makerspace in their physics lab with 3D printers. That stuff should be in the high schools. They even had crocheting and a sewing machine in this room labeled physics lab. I was there last night. And a lot of that equipment's not that expensive. That should be in high schools, because you've got to expose kids to interesting stuff. And the people that I worked with that built equipment for me would not have had those jobs if they hadn't had welding, or the other avenue was growing up working on cars. That was the other avenue.
In your HBO film, you talk, they portray that you know, you talk about having a, you want to have a life of substance and something, and do something with your life with meaning. And what point in your life did you realize that, you know, these patterns and these shapes and the way you were seeing things could create something that was bigger than yourself?
Well, I'm really getting interested in the different kinds of minds. And in my book, Visual Thinking, I discuss the scientific research behind different kinds of thinking. There's object visualizers like me who think in photorealistic pictures, and we absolutely cannot do algebra. And the people that had these metal shops couldn't do algebra either. Then you have the more mathematical pattern thinker. It's called visual spatial. And there you're a degreed engineer. Now, another interesting thing I did when I worked on the book is I went back to all the jobs where I'd spent a lot of time on the construction sites. And there's a very interesting division of labor on building something like a meatpacking plant from scratch. You have the object visualizers that make all the specialized equipment, often barely graduated from high school. The degreed engineers are doing boilers, refrigeration, snow loads on roofs. You see, this is where you need the different kinds of minds, and they have complementary skills. Now, in the first chapter of Visual Thinking, I talk about trips I did in 2019, and I realized we had a gigantic skill loss problem. I went to two pork processing plants, brand new ones, a poultry processing plant, and Steve Jobs Theater. And the poultry processing plant, all of the equipment that goes inside came over from Holland in 100 shipping containers. We're not making that equipment. Beef, we actually still know how to build, but the people are getting close to retirement now. But I was shocked when I went in this poultry plant that we didn't make any of the equipment. Then I went to the Steve Jobs Theater and the Apple Mothership building and found out that the structural glass walls were from Italy and Germany. And then as I researched for the book, I find out that the state-of-the-art electronic chip-making machine is from Holland. We invented it. The Dutch are building it. We have a problem, a big skill loss problem. And the kids that we need building this stuff, they're playing video games in the basement. And you know how you can get them off the video games? They're going to find that fixing cars is more interesting than video games. There's been five or six young adults. I wouldn't be critical if these kids were getting fabulous jobs in the computer industry. That's not happening. And we need these skills.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're having a conversation with Temple Grandin. Her new book is Visual Thinking, The Hidden Gifts of People Who Think in Pictures, Patterns, and Abstractions. Temple, I've heard you talk about sometimes you saw solutions to problems. You saw designs in your head. You thought everyone must think that way. And then you found out, indeed, that is not true. And when you looked at the issue of Fukushima, for example, you thought, how could they not see that it was going to fail because of the proximity to water? Which aspects of design can you see a solution for, and how that comes to you?
Well, let's look at risk. engineers, mathematical ones, calculate risk. I see risk. If Fukushima had had watertight doors, it would have been just fine. Because when the tsunami flooded it, the electrically driven emergency cooling pump no longer worked. Electric motors don't work underwater. I think most people know that. And what I learned is it's not stupidity. They don't see it. This is why you need the different kinds of minds working together. I can't design a nuclear reactor, but maybe I need to be working on the safety systems because I can visualize how I can break. Now, right now in the Ukraine, the reactor got knocked offline and is on depends on diesel power. And I said, you better put good diesel in those generators. Don't put old rotten stuff that's sat in the tank too long. See, I'm already thinking about that because they have that emergency cooling pump and it's got to run.
When you talk about those on the autism spectrum, no two people are alike. Some will be great mathematicians. Some will be visual thinkers like you. Can you talk about the different types of thinkers on the autism spectrum?
Well, the main difference, a lot of people are just mixtures of the different kinds of thinking. But you get someone who has autism, you may have an extreme object visualizer like me who can't do abstract math, but I'm really good at a lot of things. Or you might have an extreme mathematician and you won't have both of those extremes in the same person. They're actually opposites. There's a whole chapter in visual thinking on the research object visualizers versus the more mathematical visual spatial. And then, of course, there's some on the autism spectrum that are extreme word thinker, and they often love history. They love facts. They have great memory. And I want to look at the kinds of jobs that different minds are good at. I'm good at art, mechanics, photography, and animals. The mathematicians, of course, computer programming, all kinds of mathematical sides of engineering. And again, exposure. Bill Gates and I got exposed to the exact same computer system. We had free time on it. I had to drop the class. He took off with it. You see, this is, so he got exposed to the computer and he could do it. I tried playing musical instruments. I wasn't very good at that, but I was super good at drawing. And that skill was encouraged. We need to build on the strengths and expand them. Because I was just drawing the same horse's head over and over again. And mother says, well, let's draw the whole horse. Let's draw the stable. Taking it and expanding it. You want to take the thing the kid's fixated on, expand it and tap into that motivation. And I do a lot of talks to big corporations. And they ask me, what's the most important thing we should know? The different kinds of thinking exist. Because I didn't know that verbal thinking existed until I was in my late 30s.
It's funny, I'm kind of learning this too. I'm a very visual thinker and I'm in construction, as I mentioned, and my business partner is a structural engineer. And so everything that we do in our jobs for me is color coordinated. So every single job has a color. And so when I look at the wall of a job, I can see that the red color is a specific job without even knowing anything more. And it wasn't until last week that my business partner pointed out to me, we don't think the same. I don't see the colors like you see them. And that was a thing for me. And so how can the visual thinking be crossed over, if at all, to other individuals like an engineer that doesn't see in that particular way?
Well, this is where you need to have both. Like when Betsy Lerner and I, she's my co-author, worked on the book Visual Thinking, she's an extreme verbal thinker. We think completely differently, but we made a great complementary team because I write the rough drafts. They'd be kind of associational, kind of disorganized, and Betsy would smooth everything out. You're going to have the same thing with your construction projects. You're going to have the parts where, you need the mathematician for the snow loads on the roof, but your kind of mind is going to be really good on the aesthetic parts of the building because the engineers will just build a concrete box. And you need both kinds of minds. And what I'm really worried about is that the object visualizers like us are getting screened out. I don't know if I could graduate from high school today because I can't do algebra. I've talked to a girl that wanted to go to veterinary school. She's on a third algebra course. She thinks she might be able to squeak by with a C as in Charlie.
Well, I think you could graduate high school just to say that. But you mentioned in one of your talks about the challenges that you had in that time, that it was almost more challenging to be a female than it was to be autistic. And you kept pushing the envelope in an industry that's so heavily male driven. And what gave you just the motivation to keep going, to make sure that your design, you know, saw it through?
Well, when I was in my 20s, I had a very strong motivation to prove I wasn't stupid. It's a huge motivation. And being a woman was a much bigger barrier. I had to make myself extremely good at what I did. But I also saw doors to opportunity. There's a scene in the HBO movie where I go up and I get the editor's card because he was at a livestock event. And I realized if I wrote for that magazine, that would help my career. A lot of people don't see those doors to opportunity. And it was just luck that he was there. But I got the card, and then I started writing for that magazine. And I think that helped because there were some women writing for the livestock press. So the women were more accepted in livestock press. And I became livestock editor for that magazine. And that also was really helpful. Writing was an important part of my career too, along with the drawing.
You say that when it comes to learning and when it comes to showing what you have learned, oftentimes it's hard to sell yourself through words. It's hard if you are not necessarily a good communicator to go to a job interview, for example.
And well, the thing is, I learned to sell my work and not myself. And one of the things I made sure is that some of my drawings got put in this book. What I learned to do was to show my work. I learned to sell my work. And when I've talked to big corporations, I've said, you've got to change your interview process. And some corporations are really like the idea of that. I had another one go, oh, we can't change that. Well, let's say you're hiring mechanics for airplanes. Your very best mechanic's not going to interview very well. Maybe you ought to have them bring in pictures of the car he rebuilt. That would be an example of showing the work. You see, the tech industry's been reaching out and letting, you know, the more mathematically inclined to come in and work on programming stuff. But you see, for my kind of thinker, mechanical jobs, somebody's got to fix airplanes. I can tell you something that I would be able to do. I could visualize the entire hydraulic system or wiring harness of an airplane. Now, I can't do that overnight, but over, you know, a period of time, I could learn that. So you get some little weird problem with the plane. I'm going, yeah, hydraulics probably leaking into such and such. You see, and I would just see it.
Yes.
See, it's a different kind of thinking.
You know, in schools, at least probably was this way when you were in school, and it certainly was when I was in school, maybe David as well. You get to, you know, first grade or second grade, third grade, whatever it is, you're evaluated by your ability to read aloud to the teacher. That determines not only which reading group you go into, but a lot of the other topic subjects as well, math. And it's such an incomplete way of testing. And I'm sure that you've thought this through, how you see a new educational model, how we test for different types of thinking.
We need to, you know, I was good at art and I was given books on perspective drawing when I was a young child. Now, I couldn't read until age 8. And mother taught me with phonics, reading out loud. And within one semester, doing that for a few, you know, 4 afternoons a week, I went from no reading to 6th grade level reading. So you get into that debate. I was a phonics learner. Now there's some other kids that are different where they're a whole word learner. Also get a book that's interesting to read, a book that's worth reading. And we started with a book that was a 5th or 6th grade level book.
You're touring all these corporations, and I'm sure you're sitting down with some of the more brilliant minds in the world of business. And what is an underlying theme that you're seeing with these corporations? What are they missing in their, you know, we talked about the interview process, but just the overall structure and the way they operate their business. What are they missing? What are the components that they're not incorporating that they need to start doing?
Well, like, the first thing is they have to recognize that different kinds of thinkers exist and that they need these minds. I mean, let's say you're looking for airplane mechanics. Your regular HR departments, most of them are going to probably interview really badly. There needs to be a different way of doing the process. Like maybe you bring your kids in high school and have them work on mechanical things where they can show the skills off. The other thing I've found on, okay, the whole disability thing and big corporations is the ones that have really successful programs have a manager in high places that wants to make it work. That is extremely important. So it's a real program and not just lip service.
But I'm emphasizing we need these skills. We've got electric wires falling down in California. We've got water systems that are breaking, things that are just falling apart, a gas system that blew up in outside of Boston. And these are places where you need the visual thinkers. You see, we need all the different skills. Now, your more mathematical minds, they're going in your more traditional engineering programs, heavy on math, but you also need my kind of mind. You can't do higher math to go, hey, Fukushima should have had watertight doors. You see how basic that is? I can't design a nuclear reactor, but maybe I need to be working on its safety systems.
That's interesting. Yeah, we as a system collect the like-minded individuals to build the system, but we don't think about all the elements that go outside the system. What about the system of cattle that drew you in? I know on your aunt's farm that was a huge thing, but why did you fall so passionately into making this system work?
Well, I got exposed to it. This brings up a really important thing about careers. How can a kid that might be good at music get into music if they never got exposed to musical instruments? I got exposed to musical instruments and I never could learn how to play this little flute. Another kid will pick it up and play it. Exposure. Michelangelo dropped out of school at age 12, but he was exposed to great art and he was also exposed to stone cutting tools. You know, there'd be no David without stone cutting tools. You see, so what I'm worried about today is kids are just getting hung up on all the tech devices and they're not getting exposed to enough real things where they can go, oh, I'd like to do that for a career. You know, this is why all those hands-on classes are so important. Like in elementary school, we had theater. I was not interested in being a school play. I wanted to make scenery and costumes. And I made costumes on my Singer So Handy, real little toy sewing machine when I was in fourth grade. It was one of my favorite things.
You know, Temple, I'm thinking that your book it's good for all of us because for anyone who spends any time, a lot of time, like maybe our spouse or like David said, his business partner, you learn that everyone thinks differently and we have our strengths. Of course, your wonderful book is your target audience is maybe going to be those with different learning styles.
That's right. That's
right. Any type, autism spectrum or not, right?
Or dyslexic. Michelangelo probably had autism. Einstein didn't speak until age 3. Elon Musk came out on Saturday Night Live that he was on the spectrum. We need these minds. Spielberg was dyslexic. I found the interview he did online, and he said that making movies saved him. But let's go back to exposure. He had a movie camera as a child. See, this gets back. Very important thing of exposure. Musk grew up with all kinds of shop stuff and engineering stuff around him. And they also traveled extensively. He got exposed to all kinds of things and he learned how to work at an early age.
I often wonder, our labor shortage in just about any town right now, it makes me think like, where are all the high school kids? They're not working. What are they doing? And you say, you know, if you're sitting in your basement, playing video games all day, you're not getting the exposure, but there are joysticks in many different areas that you might find if you go out and just work and get that exposure.
Well,
right?
I'm now seeing the joysticks that are on the big excavating machines. You say, okay, that's an example of associative thinking. There's a lot of stuff out there that's more interesting than video games that actually has joystick connected to something real.
That's funny that you equate that because I was really good at video games and I love driving an excavator. So that's a...
Oh, so you're an excavator driver.
No, I'll hop in it every now and then. No, I'm on the management side of things, but I want to switch gears a little bit about and ask you about just the meat industry in general. I mean, we hear all these stipulations and things about it and from someone that's been exposed to it so much, I mean, are things getting better? Are different systems being in place or is it still just a really tough environment to be a part of?
Well, things have gotten a lot better. There are a lot of women in it now. Plants have animal welfare officers. I worked on equipment all through the 80s and early 90s. And then in the late 90s, I developed a very simple auditing program for assessing meat packing plants. And in 1999, I taught McDonald's, Burger King, and Wendy's how to use that. And it resulted in great improvement. I've got 5 journal article papers on this because you have to manage equipment. About half my clients back in the early 90s and the 80s tore up stuff and just wrecked things. You see, and then when you had a big customer coming in, and forcing them to manage it. And I'm very proud of the fact that out of the 75 McDonald's suppliers, only three had to do a capital improvement. The rest of it was repairs and simple stuff like non-slip flooring, but management. Because what I find is people want the magic thing more than they want the management. You got to have the management to go along with whatever the thing is, whether it's a computer, a drug, what, doesn't matter what it is. You also have to have the management to go along with it. And the handling of cattle has gotten so much better, but now we're starting to get some issues with lameness. The cattle are very fat. And another thing that's come up is that I originally designed my center track restrainer system, and you can look that up on Beef Plant Video Tour with Temple Grand and see how that works. You know, they'll maybe handle up to 1600 pound animal, and now you got a bigger animal and it's got to be widened. Well, this is where people are retiring out, and we only have one big shop left, and they are gouging on the prices now to fix these things, because the kids that should have been forming the little shops, starting the new little shops, they never got a chance to take welding class, or they never got a chance to do anything with building things. I'm seeing too many kids that learn how to build with Legos, but they never progress the tools. I'm seeing 16-year-olds that have never used a tool. I had a girl in my class last year who had never used a ruler to measure anything. We've got kids today totally removed from the world of the practical. So I've got a client right now getting really ripped off to fix the center track restrainer for fatter cattle. And I have to be vague because there's some confidentiality issues.
Wow. Temple Grandin, it has been such a pleasure speaking with you. I hope everyone reads your book. It's Visual Thinking, The Hidden Gifts of People Who Think in Pictures, Patterns, and Abstractions. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It was wonderful being here. Thank you.
Thank you
so much.
And we were just delighted to speak with Temple Grandin. I have wanted to talk to her for about 10 years now. Such a fascinating interview. And we will continue in just a moment. We're going to bring the conversation local to Bridge 21. We'll look forward to that conversation. You're listening to The Mountain Life here on KPCW Park City. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Sarah Irving, sitting in for David Windsor this morning.
So we are going to continue this conversation about autism and bring it locally to talk about how young, neurodiverse individuals are served to be able to live independently and form community within our greater community. Joining us now in the studio is Liza Howell, a devoted parent and founding member of Bridge 21, along with Deb Hartley, the executive director of Bridge 21. Bridge 21 is an organization formed to provide this support. Liza and Deb, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning.
And Sarah.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, stay right up close to that microphone. So let's kick off, Deb, with talking about what Bridge 21 is. Is this a local chapter? Is it a national movement? And where did it get its name?
Well, it's certainly a national crisis, and it's a national movement. We are not a national chapter. This is a very local, concentrated chapter. I think each community has or tries to do its own thing, so to speak. But Bridge 21 was born out of young adults who matriculate out of the school system at 21, and then there are no services for them. There's no place for them to live. There's precious little job opportunities, and they ultimately end up living at home with mom and dad in probably the bedroom in which they were raised. And as parents age and grow older, what happens to these young people? So Bridge 21's mission is to create affordable and sustainable housing so this community can live their most independent life possible. And we're collaborating with Mountainlands Development to create that exact, you know, model over there at Holiday Village.
Yes. Well, as Temple Grandin talked about, her mother was a huge advocate for her, was determined to find out where her brilliance lied, and it was successful. I mean, she's a doctor. She's a New York Times bestselling author. There was a movie made about her, you know, and it really worked in that case. And Liza, I'm wondering if you might share your personal story about your son, Andy, and how he has been helped along the way by great advocates as like parents like you, who you were a founding member of Bridge 21.
Well, thanks. I feel like I have a similar story to most special needs parents in that you don't sign up for this. You don't feel prepared for this, and you get a diagnosis, and then you start the long journey of going down different paths, seeing what's helpful. Some things are helpful, some things are not. And with autism, what works for one child doesn't work for another child. So it is very much an individual journey. It can be very lonely and isolating, but there is really beauty in coming together, sharing with younger moms and dads what has worked for your child. And yeah, it's been such a varied journey. And I'm thankful for the things that have helped along the way. And that's one main reason we stayed here in Park City was because of the National Ability Center. And we have such a great school district. They're very inclusive. The peer tutors, the special ed teachers are all wonderful and supportive.
You know, I think one thing that I think a lot of parents and community members would love to know is sort of this evolution of our understanding of the importance of early diagnosis, early interventions, what parents, you know, can do early, how they can partner with the school system. But then, you know, in a perfect world, what are the resources that would exist in a community to support, you know, young students like yours, but also with Bridge 21, what happens when they age out of the school system?
Well, I think the school district does a really good job with their transition program. Transition out of school into adulthood starts as early as sixth grade. That's when you have your first transition IEP meeting. So at the high school, there are different jobs that the kids will have inside the school. For instance, my son works in the cafeteria and will work assembling, you know, fruit cups, things like that. They have done a coffee cart, so little mini enterprises. And then we are blessed in Park City to have the Learning Center. And so kids who don't take a diploma but get a certificate can actually move to the Learning Center, and they work 4 days a week with vocational skills, internships, a paid job. And that program is wonderful, and I'm so thankful we have it. I think it could be expanded within the community. I would love to see a local job fair. I'd love to see maybe the nonprofits who work with the community foundation offer some type of internship, could be 2-week internship, and try and discover, you know, what might be a good fit. Because like Temple says, you know, your first interview, it may or it likely won't go well. And so these young adults need time to kind of show their skills and find a good fit.
Yeah, I think, you know, before we came on air, Deb, you were telling us a bit about a job readiness event that you held. Was it this past summer?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So Bridge 21 was offered by the Utah Parents Center out of Salt Lake to do a job readiness workshop up here, excuse me, up here in Park City. And it was a five workshops throughout the summer, and it touched on all things that individuals would need to prepare for a job. Show up on time, look somebody in the face, you know, how to look somebody in the eye, shake a hand, and how to be present. So it was really an awesome, awesome workshop, and we hope to hold it again perhaps next summer as well.
Yes. Well, it's interesting, as Temple Grandin was saying in the interview, that when she learned early on that she was never going to be able to sell herself. And, you know, granted, some of us are much better interviewers than other, you know, neurodiversity, autism spectrum or not. And she said she would never be someone who could sell herself. So she would bring her designs and her drawings that were absolute genius solutions to whatever it was she was applying to. And she would just, you know, she just say, this is what you need to do. And so I'm wondering, Liza, you know, when you've been exploring all of this with your son, you know, how you go about finding what, you know, what his strengths are so that he can present himself in a way that shows how he shines.
That is a really good question and something I need to think about. I think my son obviously has different giftings than Temple. Currently, his thing all his life is he loves basketball. He could dribble a ball before he could walk or crawl. And so now he's got the opportunity to show up at these open gyms, and basketball tryouts are next week. He would like to play college ball, play in the NBA, you know, these dreams that are typical of some boys. But I think, you know, I don't know what that's going to look like. I'm going to have to see. He would love to get a job at Big Five because it's sports related. He would also like to work at Best Buy because that's game related. Walmart, maybe in the electronics department. I very much take it one day at a time. I think looking too far ahead for me is daunting, but I'm just grateful for how far he's come.
Yeah. I'm curious about the current theory or the research on, we know that autism is on the rise, and we don't know if it is truly on the rise or if our diagnostic tools are just diagnosing it more readily, whereas before it may have been dismissed as, you know, just not getting diagnosed. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I know the numbers continue to go up. I know growing up, I didn't know any people that were autistic. The stats now, I think, are 1 in 28 boys, which is unbelievable. If 1 in 28 iPhones didn't work, we would have a solution quickly. And I know that there is no such thing as a genetic epidemic. So something is happening. We don't know what it is. We've tried all different types of diets, different modalities to help him. But I think that something is definitely going on to cause numbers like that to just be exploding and continuing to increase. But I don't know what that is.
It's interesting you mentioned, you know, growing up. And I think as I look back, I think I actually can think of people in my life, you know, parents of friends of mine, where I'm like, oh, he was, you know, that today probably, you know, would have been described as being on the spectrum. But in a lot of ways, I think the spectrum has gotten so large, to a certain degree, are we all on the spectrum? But also, you know, in terms of just the language we use nowadays and, you know, wanting to make sure that we're being as inclusive and understanding as possible, could you speak, either of you, a little bit to sort of our better understanding of language that that is used, you know, sort of clinically, but also just in terms of everyday life?
excuse me, generally speaking, the new word out there that everybody's using, that the bucket is, that people with is neurodiverse, and that is a bucket with a lot of diagnoses in it, whether it's autism spectrum, whether it's a neurological disorder, a chromosomal change. It is not mental illness, and it is not drug rehabilitation. So these things are typically things that young adults are born with. I know a lot of people are spending a great deal of time educating the community what the new terms are. And it's, we use neurodiverse or intellectual developmental disabilities. So that is a big bucket to which a lot of diagnoses falls into.
And does Bridge 21 have any sort of specific set of diagnoses within that, or is it everyone who falls into that neurodiverse bucket?
Anyone who falls into that neurodiverse bucket, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So you, as Bridge 21, are partnering, you mentioned, with Mountainlands Community Housing. I'm wondering where you are in the process of, is it a house that you're looking for, or what is it?
So that's a wonderful question. Yes, we are partnering with Mountainlands Community Housing. We will be redeveloping the Holiday Village Parkside apartment site. We have the potential for yet another location here in town with a fabulous developer. But in the interim, that's probably two and a half years out, but in the interim, Bridge 21 is actively looking for a home, a house where we can begin to house these folks so they can learn transitional skills, doing laundry, grocery shopping, cooking, making their beds, cleaning the house. So we have been actively looking. We have been in conversation with the city about a house that they own, and boy, would we love to get, we'd love the opportunity to use that. But in the meantime, I am, as a realtor, I'm scrounging every day looking for an angel donor that would provide us with a house to begin to house these people. Not free. We're, you know, nobody lives for free. We're certainly willing to pay for it, but we need, it's threefold. I want to begin to develop a waiting list for people for our community once we build it out, number one. Number two, I want the community to understand that these people need a place to live, that without this, they live either at home with their mom and dad, and when the mom and dad ages out, where do they go? Mm-hmm. Is it on the streets? Is it in some sort of facility, which is not the most attractive? So I think a home is such a great start for us, but we need help. Hello, anybody out there?
I'd like to add, too, that we're not just looking for one house. We are looking for options. So we will have some individuals that will do great in Old Town utilizing public transportation. There'll be some individuals that, you know, if we could find a farm or some land, and they will, you know, work on the farm, develop, you know, baking skills, have their own enterprise. And then we would like to have just options throughout Park City, because one size doesn't fit all, especially in our community.
There's an old saying, you've met one person with autism, you've met one person.
Yeah, so well said. Mm-hmm. And I, talking to Temple Grand, and that's something that really struck me, is the various proclivities or brilliances that there are within the autism community. And that's why I get stuck a little bit on developmental disabilities. It's a label, and she talked a lot about this, is a lot of times you get labeled, and then guess what? You're sitting in mom and dad's house in the basement gaming. And nonstop, 24/7. And this brings me back to maybe a little conversation about the job market out there and how we educate kids, and that we really should go back to this world of vocational skills, where, you know, people on the autism spectrum may be great with that joystick, so they should be, you know, operating heavy machinery with the joystick or whatever it is. You don't need to be stuck in your parents' basement, you know, with video games the rest of your life. Liza, you're nodding up and down like, oh yes, you've been here.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Yeah, more opportunity, more job experiences, internships, I think would be a way to start that process for mm-hmm. sure.
I'm curious, as you know, as Bridge 21 has grown, and actually I should go back. Did you say it was 2 years?
It began forming in 2018.
Okay, so about 4 years ago.
Correct.
Are there models in other parts of the United States or even globally that you guys look to where, you know, communities have embraced what you are trying to do with your mission with Bridge 21, and that, you know, we can look to as good examples of what Park City and Summit County can offer?
As a matter of fact, there are several opportunities throughout the country, all one-offs. You know, one organization is doing it this way, another organization is doing it this way. I have visited a number of organizations. One of them was down in Arizona, which was an absolutely brilliant living residences for these folks. They strongly say you do not use facility, because you and I don't live in a facility. These folks don't want to live in a facility. So mm-hmm. we're just residences. So that was a very interesting concept. I think our concept is a little larger. We would like to have our neurodiverse population living amongst everybody that's neurotypical, mm-hmm. so that it's just a neuroinclusive community, and we don't have A over here and B over here, that everybody lives communally together.
And that's the theme when we talk about housing in general, right? It's everything is integrated.
It's integrated, yes. And certainly
and inclusive.
Much more supportive.
Yes.
We have a goal of making, of what we create, we really want it to be replicable. So if you're in Nashville, Tennessee, you could see how Park City did it. And, oh, they did that well. Look at how well that works. Because it's so frustrating in the special needs community, where why do we always have to reinvent the wheel? I just so want us to build something that is effective and an easy to follow model, mm-hmm. so that other, you know, parents aren't having to reinvent the wheel.
Well, and I think that really speaks to the importance of these, you know, public-private partnerships is a term that we throw around when we talk about, you know, things that either like cities or municipalities are engaging upon. But here in Park City, we are so we benefit so much from incredible nonprofits that operate in the area and incredible municipal resources that are offered through the city, through the counties as well. I see you have a list of a few that you that Bridge 21 partners with. I think, you know, for those listening, this is a big week in town. We're supporting a lot of nonprofits with Live PC coming up on Friday.
Including Bridge 21.
Of course, yes. And, you know, this is a day of community giving, but it's also a day for community learning. You know, for folks who might not be familiar with some of the organizations that exist, maybe there's folks out there listening right now who had not yet heard of Bridge 21. But where, how do you partner with different organizations in town?
Well, we have a beautiful partnership with Mountainlands Community Housing Trust. Pat Matheson, the director there, has really caught our vision and has a heart for Bridge 21. And with his help, we're going to see this through. Of course, the National Ability Center, what a shining star in our community. They have, they're one of the main reasons why we live here in Park City is to be able to access those programs. Lucky Ones Coffee, providing employment for people with disabilities, is a fantastic group. Katie and Taylor are amazing, mm-hmm. and they consider themselves the lucky ones.
We love that.
And Summit Community Gardens, Sloan and Natalie have been just a wonderful help and support for Bridge 21. We had two plots out there this whole summer and really enjoyed being outside and having a time to just get our hands dirty. It was super therapeutic. The Park City School District is amazing with their special ed program and the Learning Center. There's a lot of good in this town that I'm grateful for.
One of the things that I have discovered as my new role here as executive director for Bridge 21 is the amount of resources that are out in the city or out in the state. I have spent probably the last 6 months just touching enormous amount of resources and wonderful people that are out there that unfortunately I don't think parents even realize that are out there. So therefore we created Bridge 21 Circle, which is a parent group, which brings light to, first of all, brings all these parents together with a common denominator. And every month we have a guest speaker from one of these fabulous resources that comes up and shares with us what their service offers so these parents can tap into it. So we're growing in leaps and bounds.
If I'm a parent listening right now, perhaps my child has just been diagnosed or whatever it is, or maybe you've come to a slow understanding about this and your child is, I don't even know if you use the words high functioning on the spectrum, or maybe Asperger's. If you're listening now, give us the dates of those meetings and then how someone might get in touch with you all.
So our next parent meeting is November 10th. Leah Harder is our guest speaker that night, and we always have a potluck. It's well attended. We try to make it easy for the parents to come, so we provide dinner, child care, activities for the youngsters, so they have something to do, so the parents can focus on the meeting. So that's the Bridge 21 Circle. The next meeting is November 10th. You can always reach out to us at bridge21parkcity.com. We're on Facebook, and there's a Bridge 21 Circle page also on Facebook as well.
Great. If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're speaking with Deb Hartley. She is the new-ish executive director of Bridge 21, along with Liza Howell, who is a founding member of Bridge 21 and a devoted parent. We have just enough time for a few more questions, but Liza, I'm just wondering how you have seen your son Andy prosper, because we do have things like newer diagnostic tools and early intervention. Can you share with us how that has affected him? Or I think there's such a curiosity around this for parents in general, people in general.
Yeah, I feel like, so he's the youngest of four. He has three older sisters, which is super helpful because they've always treated him completely normal. I think ABA has been a real big help for him. He's aged out of that.
What's ABA?
Applied Behavioral Analysis. We have a local chapter of that here with Brittany Coyle. That's just kind of the most
typical autism intervention. We stayed here. We used a woman named Anat Benyel, who has the Anat Benyel method. Andy gained a lot of progress through her. And the National Ability Center, when we first moved here in the summer, I thought the National Ability Center was just the trailer on the side of the mountain. I had no idea about the ranch. And looking into it, I realized they had a siblings camp. And I thought, how thoughtful is that, that one of his sisters can go with him, meet other siblings of, kids with special needs. And so the Park City is just super thoughtful. And I think just as he, people reach out to him and take the time to get to know him, that is where the progress comes from, because he's an amazing individual. He's just a little bit delayed in his reaction time. And so if people will slow down, it's hard to do in Park City. This is a town of fast-paced, high energy, smart, successful people. So, slow down a little bit and meet your neighbors.
Liza Howell, Deb Hartley of Bridge 21. Again, the parent meeting is November 10th. You can find more information at bridge21parkcity.com or go on the Facebook page. And let's pull together as a community and help you. What a great mission.
It does take a village for sure.
It
thanks,
does.
Lynn.
It does. Thanks so much. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life.